All right. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and we are broadcasting today from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people on the University of British Columbia. I'm Lily, by the way. You're listening to The Real World, which is UBC Film Society's radio segment. And the UBC Film Society does not just have a radio segment. We have all sorts of film-related stuff going on. We've got pub nights, beer gardens. Tonight we're screening Good Will Hunting, and we've got a student film showcase on Friday, I was just told. So you should head to those. Most of our events happen in The Norm, which is a theater in the Life Building on UBC campus. But if you want to check out more about our updates, you probably want to head to our Instagram. It has the most information. So that's UBC Film Society. I think that's the whole username. Today, I've got quite a few special guests in the studio. Usual guest is...
Yeah, it's Emma. I'm here again, as per usual.
All right. And then we also have two very special guests. Film Society's very own Millie.
Hello.
And UBC's very own Ava.
Hi.
And today I'm really glad to have you guys on because we are talking about dance films.
Yes.
So we're kind of running with a theme. We did some sports films like a couple months ago. This time around we're doing dance. And we've got three major movies we want to cover today. We're covering The Red Shoes, Black Swan, and
Suspiria.
But before we hit it off with those, we want to jump into a couple ads. So we'll be right back.
ZZ Theatre presents the Rainbow Youth Project, produced by Yanting Chu and curated by Brittany O'Rourke, Alan Pronger, and Bria Chance. This annual community storytelling project centers the 2S LGBTQ+ voices who often don't get a say in their lives, bodies, and identities. Bringing two-spirit, queer, and trans youth from across Metro Vancouver to share their stories. The Rainbow Storytelling Project is a low-barrier, one-on-one project in which people share true stories from their lives. It is designed to challenge stereotypes and preconceived notions of otherness, promote dialogue, reduce prejudices, and encourage understanding by connecting people who, under normal circumstances, might never meet. The Rainbow Youth Project will be running on dates November 16th, 17th, the 23rd, and 24th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Vancouver Public Library Central Branch on the third floor. This is a free event with no sign-up required. All that is necessary is your attendance and your empathy.
On January 17th, UBC Radio CITR 101.9 FM presents our 24 hours of radio art programming, featuring innovative approaches to music and sound. It's 24 hours of spoken word, ambient, drone, field recordings, collage, plunderphonics, robocalls, voicemail fails, sound research, and noise. Listen live on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca. For more details and submission requirements, email us at radioart@citr.ca.
Hey there! Do you like sweet and sentimental stories and songs?
Do you enjoy a pleasant chat and a giggle with pals? Then you're going to love our show, Love Notes, here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Every week, a new guest selects a great love of their life, a sibling, a romantic partner, a best friend, and we get to make a show about the stories and songs that make up their love.
Join us on this journey for the ears and the heart every other Tuesday at 10 a.m.
All right, we are back. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. If you missed the start, this is The Real World, UBC Film Society's radio show. So Millie, Ava, Emma apparently just dropped that She's also a dancer. We're talking about dance films today. So my first question was, what's your guys' history with dance?
I danced like my entire childhood. Yeah, basically right up until my gap year. So a good 18 years, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of similar story for me. Most of my life I danced, and I kind of stopped after I graduated high school, but now I'm on the UBC dance team, keeping it up a little bit, which is fun. Plug
there. And Emma?
I danced until the fifth grade, so I did ballet for a few years, competitive dance.
It bounced around a lot, yeah. No, I had you know, a couple of years of it.
Okay, well, I danced a little bit, but not as much as you guys. I was curious, since we're talking about dance films, and all of you guys are dancers, but also have worked on film sets before. I've, like, had the pleasure of working with, I think, all of you on some sort of film set. Have you always been interested in topics like connecting dance and its artistic form and seeing how that's represented in film? I know that, Millie, you're writing like a paper on this right now. So yes. Is it kind of coming down to this, or has this been an idea that's been building for a while?
Yeah, so basically in your fourth year cinema studies major, which I'm in, we take a class, which is just the entire semester is writing a paper on like any topic that you want to talk about. And it felt like important to me, I guess, to talk about something that I cared about. And my professor like was like, well, think about what you enjoy. And I know I wanted to talk about Black Swan, and it kind of led me to talk about these three films. So yeah, I mean, it's just cool because I'm writing about something that I really like and care about.
Yeah, totally. So Black Swan was your first pick, and then it led you to the other two?
I'd already seen both of the other films, but I didn't know like how I could bring them together.
Okay, yeah.
To talk about the three, but yes.
Well, let's kick it off with the first one. This is The Red Shoes. It's 1948, mm-hmm. Directed by Michael Powell and mm-hmm. Emmerich, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, Pressburger.
Yeah, I think so.
And it's about a young ballerina, and she ends up being torn between like a life with like a man she loves versus being a dancer.
Yeah.
And these are kind of like pinned against each other in mm-hmm. a way.
So like the whole point of the film is that she has to choose between either her career or finding love, and it kind of carries consequences, like both choices, and it kind of drives her insane.
Yeah, and we see that again. I mean I haven't seen Suspiria, but in Black Swan it's very similar ideas, like mm-hmm. driven to the point of insanity,
yeah.
because of this like striving for perfection.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about in my essay. But yeah, and it's kind of seen in Suspiria as well. I mean, we'll get to that later.
I mean, I remember talking to you about this, Ava, recently, when we were discussing like this idea of perfection and how you're supposed to like display an image of effortlessness, but like these movies dive into like all of the effort that goes into looking effortless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's like a really important perspective, like especially for your dance films, because usually when you're encountering dance as like an art form, you're at the show, you're at like a physical theater, and mm-hmm. you're an audience member, and yeah, you're not seeing any of those behind the scenes processes, which is why I like when dance films kind of dive into that, and then you can kind of maybe get a little bit of a perspective, a dramatic perspective of what it might look like.
Yeah, totally. I was kind of thinking about, like, when we watch a movie, we don't really know about all of the effort that goes into, like, saying these lines perfectly.
Yeah.
Like, you don't realize, like, mm-hmm. I guess you're not supposed to realize that they're saying lines. You're supposed to just, like, think that it's actually happening and it's actually real. And I don't know if there's, like, an extra layer to that, because, like, even Moira Shearer plays the main girl, Victoria Page. Mm-hmm. And throughout the movie, I don't know if this has something to do with the time that it came out. Like, it's from the 40s. She is like always very poised and elegant, and her hair is always perfect the entire film. Like, is that intentional? Like, is it supposed to be a commentary on like the fact that like actors, performers or like artists always just appear like ready?
Yeah, and maybe I haven't thought about that actually, but like the idea of being perfect as well maybe takes like a physical embodiment on the dancers, because obviously your body is your instrument, so you want it to be perfect,
right,
or as close to perfect as you can possibly get. So that probably is a read that you could make. Yeah.
And I guess we don't really get, and it's not until the end of The Red Shoes that we get a chance to like see her start to crumble when mm-hmm. she's really asked this question, like, it's love or it's ballet.
Yeah.
And then she kind of starts to, I don't know, break like this exterior shell where her hair is perfect and she's got perfect posture, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We finally see her start to break right at the end. And the end really surprised me. And I'm not against spoilers. Do you talk about like the end specifically in your essay?
I kind of. I talk about the shoes and like the color red.
Tell me about it.
So my essay is kind of about like themes of female rage.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about how the reds like symbolize passion, but also danger and sacrifice. And that's kind of what happens is she is sacrificing one element of her life that's important to her, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like we see this physically through the use of the actual red shoes themselves. Yeah.
I was kind of trying to explain to Ava and Emma, because you guys haven't seen the film, right?
No, unfortunately, I didn't get around to this one, which is devastating because
it
looks so pretty. And like your description of the plot, this sounds like insane. Like I need to watch this immediately.
Other than the plot, like there's this dance sequence in the middle, like, and it goes on for a really long time. It's so stunning. It's one of those like really beautiful old Technicolor that like restored really well. Like just beautiful films. Like cinematography is like insane.
Yeah, because this was like, I know this film like received like critical acclaim pretty much from the moment it came out, which isn't the case with all of the films we'll be talking about today. But even like this one, I know, like even you were saying, like everyone you follow on Letterboxd has given it like
five stars
in a heart.
Yeah.
And I can definitely see why, even just like based off the stills I've seen from this movie, it looks so compelling.
Yeah.
And like the way the themes of like perfection seem to be explored through this is really like interesting.
And it's interesting to see how it ties into the other two films as well.
I'm excited to see that because I didn't see The Red Shoes either, but I've seen the other two.
Yeah, me too.
And just by the looks of it, I'm thinking, oh, how are these going to connect? So I'm really excited to hear your insights.
You kind of see a common theme between the three of them within like this perfectionist like trope, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess like also what perfection like leaves out, like I feel like the main character, the director of the company, kind of throughout the movie is giving her these these rules of, if you want to be a ballerina, this is what is so opposite of perfection. Like sorrow is pinned as the opposite of perfection. Like sleep or rest is pinned as the opposite of perfection. Like love is the opposite of perfection. Like you really have to choose one or the other. Even like talking, like a couple times he's like, I'll do the talking, you do the dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Like expressing yourself and like your opinion, that does not fall in this realm of if you want to be a perfect ballerina.
Yeah.
And I feel like drawing up these kind of regulations for her over the course of the film, it has like this structure to it that at least I associate with ballet. Like ballet is like, to me, seems like the most structured, like following very precise movements, maybe compared to other more like flowy types of dance. I mean, I don't really know types of dance. It's like ballet to me feels the most disciplined. Mm-hmm. And he's giving this list of regulations that I feel like tied that together really nicely for me.
Yeah.
There's like such a sense of like prestige around ballet that you don't always get with other dance forms. I feel like lends itself to this perfectionism like really well. Like you just think, like, I don't know, like you think of a ballerina and it's like, oh, this like, you know, strong poised figure who's like graceful, always hitting all these beats. Mm-hmm.
Like, so it's, it's interesting how they kind of like take this but also break it down at the same time and show the imperfections and show like the dangerous side of being a ballerina. Because all of these films have that, like, aspect of danger. And, like, the fact that females are inherently dangerous in film is, like, really exemplified through each of the characters' arcs. Yeah. Mm.
I like that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that also contrasts really nicely because both of them, at least the ones that I saw, have an element of fantasy,
yeah,
and like mm-hmm. imaginaries, which I feel like are often, I guess they could go either way. They could be a dreamlike fantasy or a nightmare-like fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in The Red Shoes, we get a little bit more dreamlike, at least when we're like transported. Like you were saying, there's like this 15, like over 15 minute segment where it's, you're literally just watching the ballet.
Yeah. I think it's even longer. I think it goes like past half an hour, if I'm not wrong.
Maybe I cut it off when she goes into the wings. Yeah. Maybe I was like, she does go into the wings at some point and like changes something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe it was like full 30 minutes of she's just, you're literally just watching the ballet, and it takes you not from the audience perspective of a stage, but into the world yeah. itself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which I feel like is like a transformation that was a bit dreamlike sequence.
Yeah.
But the story of the ballet, The Red Shoes, is also kind of nightmarish.
Yes, it is.
So balancing those, and then that also ties in with Black Swan. We also have a lot of like dreamlike sequences of like, mm-hmm. is this real or imagined?
Yeah, and that happens in Suspiria too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
There's a lot of like blurring the lines between what is and isn't real.
Yeah.
Like, can you mm-hmm. like trust yourself and that sort of thing, which is...
And yeah, it's kind of brought on through this, again, perfectionism. Like they're driven mm-hmm. insane, trying so hard to like manipulate their bodies in ways that are like damn near impossible, that it starts to like mess with
yeah.
their perception of reality.
Yeah.
I mean, this is very clearly seen in Black Swan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you also can't ignore the fact that like the gender dimension of this, and yes. I think all of them, I think like comment on this, at least like what I'm looking at is women in ballet and artists, like they're kind of given this choice between like a traditional, like if you want a home life versus if you want to be a professional artist. And there's also this idea, I don't know if you guys have any explanations like more on this in real life, but like the aging out of an artist, mm-hmm. of like retiring ballerinas mm-hmm. early, at least I remember that from Black Swan, mm-hmm. and same from in The Red Shoes, when like his principal ballerina got married and just kind of like pushed out of the company. Is this a common thing?
I think within like even celebrity studies as a whole, like prioritizing the new over the established is mm-hmm. a trend, and it's a very real fear. Because mm-hmm. ballerinas do retire by, like, latest, like, mid-30s, I think.
Yeah.
So, like, your time is limited.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I think it also depends on, like, the context of where you are. Because, for example, like, some companies really prioritize, like, their dancers who have tenure. Like, if you're looking at the National Ballet of Canada, which is in Toronto, where I'm from, like, they still have so many of their, like, original older dancers who are, yeah, like, still not very old, like, nearing late 30s or mid-30s. And they're very celebrated. Like, I think the themes in Black Swan and, like, they show more of the kind of, like, scarier side mm-hmm. of like pushing when, away yeah, the older dancers. Yeah.
And you're out.
But I think, like, it's not necessarily... I mean, obviously, like, these are artists that are... like very celebrated and mm-hmm. it comes with it when you commit to being a dancer as your career. You know it's not going to be like the longest life, like, you know, and then they turn to choreography and they turn to teaching. So I think in ways, like, even though you're not a dancer, you kind of like segue into other related career paths.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to give a listen to Main Title. I mean, there's a lot of great songs from The Red Shoes, but let's give a little listen and then we can finish off with anything else on The Red Shoes before we move on to Black Swan, just to make sure we can squeeze it all in.
Yes.
So this is Main Title from the film.
Thank you.
All right. We're back. And we're going to move on to Black Swan now. So this is 2010, Darren Aronofsky. It's got Natalie Portman and Mila Kunis. And
Winona Ryder.
It's true. Basically, it's about Natalie Portman's character, Nina, and she's like this talented but unstable ballerina. And she's cast as the Swan Queen in Swan Lake, but she's pushed to her breaking point.
Yeah. So, like, similar pipeline to
this. Yeah, basically it is. One question I had about this one, did you talk about this in your essays? Or do you have any personal experiences with this? Of what me and Ava were noticing, at least when we were watching it, was like this link between adolescence and dance. And you guys were all childhood dancers. So I guess that's why I'm curious. Did this like evoke any type of nostalgia for you? Or is this theme connecting dance to like childhood and how they're very like intertwined? Is that something that you've thought of or felt in the same way?
I think so. I think the way that like Nina's mother treats her kind of speaks to this. Like, she infantizes her a lot, and like, even though she's what, like 21, 22 age,
she
gets treated like she's like 14.
Exactly.
Which is really interesting.
Like her room, like the decoration. Yeah. I feel like they're very intentional about all of that.
Yeah.
It's like fully pink. She's still got all her stuffed animals and like her music box, and she gets like kind of tucked in every night.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like this kind of ties back to like even what we were talking about like dance, especially ballet, having such a hard endpoint of like you're not going past your mid 30s. Like maybe like trying to hold on to some of that youth. It's like
the more you hold on to it, the longer you'll last.
Yeah, exactly. You can see like where it starts to get like unhealthy in this, where it's like you're just clinging to a past and you can't grow up, and it's like you're losing out on the rest of your life trying to maintain this youth.
Definitely. Yeah. And I feel like also it really ties into like the character of Odette in Swan Lake, who like I remember at the beginning of Black Swan when they're all at the bar and the company director, whatever his name is, hate that guy, but he's like going on kind of like talking about, you know, you would be like encompassing like this virginal, innocent version of like this girl's character who's in the Swan Lake. And like, I think that's why Natalie Portman's character is like, she really aligns with that, with like that whole idea of like being so like having her innocence still there, like, and you see that in her personal life.
And you can see her trying to like let it go as well when she gets cast as the Black Swan, because that's something that she struggled with, was like finding this dark side, this mature side, which is like the comments that she gets from the artistic director. His name's Thomas.
Oh God.
But there was a quote from the film that I quoted in my essay, and it basically, he says to her, in 4 years, every time you dance, I see you getting obsessed, getting each and every move perfectly right, but I never see you lose yourself ever. He says that to her in his office.
I totally remember that exact scene, because I was watching it with Lily, and I was thinking like, no company director would ever, like, of a ballet company would ever say you never lose yourself. Like the goal, like, especially if you're maybe not a principal dancer, but if you're in the core, like, you should never be losing yourself. And it does tie into the idea of like achieving visual perfection, and you want to look like everyone else when you are a ballerina, especially in the core, like when you are in a group, like you all want to look exactly the same. I remember watching that exact, like, that quote unfold, and I was like, oh God, something is weird is about to happen, because no director would ever say, oh, you need to lose yourself when doing Swan Lake.
And I think like it was jarring for her to hear, I guess, if like that's how you feel listening to it.
Yeah,
like hearing her basically be told to go against everything she's
exactly
growing up about being a ballerina,
the regimen, everything we were just saying about discipline, like,
and then being told to lose yourself, but then she takes it literally.
Yeah
throughout the rest
wild
of the
I think it's really interesting. It's like you see the play between like this constant like strive for perfection, then when you do like reach some sort of perfection, it's like, no, you know, they can't stand the perfection. It's like you're being told to pull back, like,
and then it ruins them.
It's true. And what does that even look like? Like, so the Black Swan is called
Odile.
Odile. to be Odile, like, this is someone who's kind of more chaotic or, like,
evil, which just isn't her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I guess, like, taking on this role that's kind of opposite of the perfect kind of pristine white swan, I guess it ties back into, like, this idea of looking effortless, but, like, putting a lot of effort into that. So not looking chaotic or evil when you do it, you still want to look like graceful, but still trying to like embody this idea of like, no, but this is darker and this is different than the swan before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so hard because it's like historically, which is also shown in the movie, like it's always played, Odette and Odile are both played by the same ballerina or danced by the same ballerina, I should say. And so, yeah, you need to encompass like both of those dynamics and both of those feelings in your performance. And I think like that's why it's so interesting that Mila Kunis's character kind of represents the black swan ideal for Natalie Portman's character. And especially though, because like at the end of the day, they're, you know, kind of two sides of the same coin, like they're supposed to be the same, like in the, like have the same essence at the end of the day. And I don't know, I would love to hear like your analysis on like kind of seeing herself in like Mila Kunis's character and like how they kind of interact.
Yeah, well, it's like the duality of femininity, right? So it's the innocence versus the ambition.
It's kind of just the duality of femininity. Yeah, it is.
And yeah, it's just interesting. I mean, I focus more on Nina and her character.
Okay.
But that's, it is interesting to see them kind of influence each other. But also, the final performance, I think, is when we truly see Nina, like, embody this evil, I guess. And, again, we go back to lines blurring between what's real and what's not real, as she kind of transforms into the swan.
Yeah.
And her eyes go yellow and she grows all these wings and
it's crazy.
Yeah.
And not only, I was thinking about this as well, Ava, of not just like seeing herself in Lily's character, but like there's doubling all over the place. Like mirrors are a huge part of the film.
Yes.
Even just between like tying back to this idea of like adolescence or aging out, like her and her mom, they even say or point to the fact that her mom is kind of living vicariously through her daughter.
Yeah.
And there's this great image of the two sitting in their little like apartment, and there's a mirror, but it's turned in this way that her mom is reflected in front of her and she's reflected in front of her mom. And it's kind of doubling them or mirroring.
Yeah, I talk about the mirrors and how they kind of represent Nina's like fractured identity.
Okay, well, yeah.
Because she's very like, I don't know what I would diagnose her as, but there's something going on. Or even in like without the mirrors, when she walks past herself in the street and does that double take.
I was thinking that, yeah.
That one's been turned into a meme. It's all over the internet.
No, like, unmemeify it.
No, I know, it's so good. It's too good to be turned into a meme. But yeah, the like dual identities is like so present throughout this film.
Oh, that's a great read as well. I was thinking of it literally as like the idea of the swan like split into two, like the same character playing two versions, and like seeing yourself like a mirror of yourself, but a mirror as like a barrier between like seeing your true identity or something is a totally different read. That that's really cool.
Yeah.
And I think like also for part of it, we were wondering, we kind of had a bit of like Fight Club inspo coming in with our thinking, because we were saying like at some parts we were like, oh my god, is Lily even real? Like we kind of had the idea of like after they come back from the club that night, I remember Lily, you said, sorry, it's getting confusing with all the Lilies, but you were saying, oh my god, is Lily even there right now?
Yeah.
And like that's really interesting, because I think it could be argued like throughout the whole thing that like what was Lily's character like in reality? Like obviously Nina's such an unreliable narrator, like we don't really know who Lily was. And like when you watch the movie, you're thinking like, okay, Lily's pretty normal, like she's kind of just being nice, you know. And then like Nina's really taking this as, oh my god, she's out to get me, like there's that like competitive nature, but really it's like she has that like tense competitiveness with herself, because she's seeing Lily as her like black swan identity, like in a way that's like so reflected, like she can see it's like it is her alter ego, but you know, she's her own person.
That is true.
It's crazy.
Yes, I like that.
The doubling in this like movie and just in like dance in general, I feel like is so.
Well, I feel like dance is so competitive and you're constantly getting mm-hmm. compared. It's very difficult mm-hmm. to like separate yourself from mm-hmm. that.
Or the fact that there's always like an understudy. Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of like
an alternate.
An alternate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was like, well, like there needs to be an alternate. Like it's not my fault that I was chosen as yours. Mm-hmm. Like she kind of says that.
Yeah.
But there's always someone else that could be playing yeah. your part, mm-hmm. kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, yeah, like, Nina would know that, like, as a dancer. Like, she, of course, an understudy is very normal to have, but mm-hmm. you see, like, her, like, messed up perception of the situation yeah. and of Lily's character. And yeah, like, that, like, mm-hmm. really competitiveness of, oh, my God, she's literally out to get my role. Like, she's so distorted in her thinking about, like, about Lily and about the situation where, yeah, like an understudy is very normal to have, but of course she takes that as, mm-hmm. oh my God, I'm mm-hmm. being casted out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially like with the hallucinations.
Yeah.
Like Whoa. Kind of taking over her life as well. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. Really interesting watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Emma and I were talking about, because I was kind of explaining where and when I had to cover my eyes or block my ears.
Yes.
Yeah. Blocking my ears actually became more of an urgent matter because yeah. the sound was so crazy.
Yeah, wow, the sound was really interesting. And I know we were also noticing that at the beginning too, with even just like the scene with her and like the winged beast that like
yeah
that curses her to make her become a swan, like when she's having that dream at the beginning. I remember mm-hmm. Lily, you were saying like, wow, the sound of just like their bodies like mm-hmm. like touching and like interacting and the lifts and all that. And then you get like her toes cracking later in the
yeah.
in the mm-hmm. film. And like I just think the sound detailing was really, really interesting.
It captures everything. Like it felt like they had a mic like yeah, at every yeah. point of everything. Yeah. It was really cool. And I was also thinking about how the camera work as well
mm-hmm.
played a role in like contrasting these ideas of like the nightmarish kind of fantasy sequence when me and Ava were like, is this really happening right now?
Yeah.
But then it's also contrasted by her just kind of on the subway, like meandering around, like,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and it's a handheld right behind her head.
Yeah.
It's very intimate and like, it feels authentic. Like you're just kind of tracking her on her way to ballet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe this is another thing of like doubling, like coming yeah. back to like, okay, very authentic, like
yeah.
real reality versus like
right.
this very raw, like
yeah.
shaky stuff that's happening in the fantasy sequences.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I don't know. I keep tying it back to like these two versions of something. Like there's pairs in everything I can yeah. think of in
like
this
the
movie.
Two versions of Nina.
Yeah.
The innocent very version true. And then the, you know, ambitious, mm-hmm. crazy. Mm-hmm. I guess
totally version. And I actually think like those the handheld shots that you're talking about like behind her mm-hmm. are actually like really interesting in the way I was just thinking about it when you were talking about the red shoes and about like the perfection being manifested into this physical appearance and like this look of slicked back perfection
mm-hmm.
and like I think honestly those like behind her head shots of like her bun are really important because she always has that perfect bun until, you know, she comes hungover into the day of the yeah. show. She's there mm-hmm. on the stage and like it's doing that tracking shot of her from behind and her like bun is completely messed up. Like that's, I feel like that's like the first time we see her hair so out of line, and that definitely reflects like her mindset that it's yeah. turning for the worse.
Yeah.
Like when it reaches a breaking point.
Yes.
Basically. Yeah.
On the theme of perfection, I've got, can anyone actually speak on the score before I give a little play of perfection?
Goes crazy.
Yeah.
Well, the score comes from Clint Mansell. Mm. Hope I'm pronouncing these names right, guys.
Shout out to him. He was cooking in the studio. He went insane for this one.
So we'll give a little listen here to perfection. Oh, an iconic track. Like, it, have any of you seen Black, not Black Swan, have any of you seen Swan Lake?
Yes.
I haven't.
Where'd Swan you guys Lake see it?
I saw it at, as I was saying, the National Ballet of Canada. And fun fact, my mom is sometimes working in the costume department at the ballet. Mm. So during Swan Lake, I think it was like 2021 or 2022, and she was doing the tutus for Swan Lake, so we went to see it.
Whoa.
And yeah, it's very magical. Like, it's so a cool. It's a great ballet. Shout out my mom.
A shout out, Samara. I'm literally dying to see Swan Lake live.
Yeah, you'll have to.
Because we even got a little section of it in The Red Shoes, right?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Yes, I think so.
Like, it's a very iconic sound. Very iconic. So I was like, it only happened for like a short while when she was kind of touring as the main ballerina of like many different ballets.
Yeah.
On to the last though, Suspiria. This is the
2018 version
version that we're talking about today.
Luca Guadagnino's version. So just for context, it is a remake of the 1977 Giallo slasher. So Giallo was like a Italian film movement, and it was very bright colors, very like slasher, but the 2018 version is a lot colder, a lot more drawn out, and it just fit better with my essay. But basically the plot is this dancer Susie arrives in 1970s Berlin to audition for a world-renowned the Marcos Dance Company, which is very famous. It's contemporary, by the way, not ballet.
Okay.
Which is a bit more flowy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's got like notes of ballet, but it's more relaxed, more like rolling on the floor, I guess. non-dancers.
Okay.
And she vaults to the role of lead dancer. The woman she replaces breaks down and accuses the company's female directors of witchcraft. So this one's interesting because it's really centered around women.
Female directors, yes.
But it's still, you still have that same like power dynamics that we had in the last two with the male director kind of being
exploiting
the dancers, because that's very much present in this film too. And they basically uncover a bunch of dark secrets as they kind of get more into the company.
I think it's also really interesting, like, literally, like, just how central women are. Like, even the one central main character of this like therapist is played by a woman. Like, it's just, it's Tilda Swinton, which is crazy.
Oh yeah, she's like, she's the artistic director. Right. She's like the main person, and she's really intimidating in that film as well.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, the actresses are so amazing. Like, it's a very iconic cast.
Yeah, it is. Let me find out who's in it.
I know Mia Goth is in it.
Yeah, Mia Goth is in it. She's iconic.
Dakota Johnson
is Susie.
One of the Olsen twins, isn't there?
Oh, what? Really?
Or am I thinking of someone else?
Tilda Swinton's the like the director, and then Mia Goth is Sarah, who's like the best friend.
Who plays Olga?
That's
the one I thought was an Olsen twin.
Elena Fakina.
Oh, okay.
but yeah.
How did you tie it back to either of the movies we've talked about?
So I was kind of looking again at that like bodily autonomy versus control. So, and also that intersection of ambition with going crazy, but also this one with supernatural power. Because the other two are more like becoming, having hallucinations, whereas this one has like a more physical embodiment of like the surreal. And then ritualistic manipulation and sacrifice as well. But so there's like a scene where Susie is auditioning to be the main part, and the girl who she's replacing is in another room, and every time Susie would like extend her arm, the other girl's arm would break.
Oh god, I hate that.
So you like it, her movements had a direct impact on this other girl. And that's kind of the vibe of the whole film, is it's like tearing down different people to get to the top.
Yeah.
And they have this main performance called the, like, Volk was the name, which kind of blurs a line between like violence and beauty. And one of, so Mia Goth's character, Sarah, breaks her leg as she like discovers something, and she has this like breakdown in the middle of the performance, and it's really jarring, like shocking part, which I thought that was really interesting. And it's kind of like, it's a representation, like a visual representation of how the dancers' bodies are controlled or contorted for supernatural purposes.
Well, even with, like, the red shoes I'm thinking of, like, there's a magical element to them.
Yeah.
Because when she puts them on, like, no matter what, like, they force her to keep dancing.
Yeah.
And to get rid of that, she has to sacrifice herself. Like, this idea of sacrifice, I think, maybe is common through all of them.
Yeah, it is. True. Definitely.
Yeah. Like, even...
Well, like, yeah, like, Susie sacrificing, this other girl being sacrificed so that Susie can take on that main role.
Even, like, back to Black Swan, when Nina, like, jumps off, sorry, spoiler, like, literally commits suicide at the end, like, pretty much. And, like...
In the name of perfection. Yeah. And she tells you that.
Yeah, and she's, like, wanting to preserve her image of being perfection. Like, even she was saying, like, I felt it, like, I was perfect. And, like, you know, she is happy dying in that state if it can live on eternally in her name.
Yeah, and... Susie kind of has that vibe as well, because she says she gets angry because Tilda keeps giving her corrections and she's just not getting it, and she kind of, she like snaps and she goes, I want to be this company's hands, like I want to do this well, because she's idolized this company for so long, as many of these young ballerinas do, that when you finally reach it, you don't want to let it go. And then she gets angry that she isn't perfect, and it kind of builds up with the music too. And then Tilda goes, you're mistaking physical weakness with artistic preference, while she's frustrated. So it's like, what does this excess of perfectionism tell us as the audience? Yeah, I feel like there are a lot of parallels with like the rehearsal scenes with Black Swan, of them just getting frustrated when they can't do it.
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring up, like, yeah, when they take on this role, they're not just in this position of owing themselves like the peace of mind that they were perfect, like, in their own right. Like, no, they owe the company, they owe the ballet for however long Swan Lake has been a ballet.
In the principal role as well, which all three of them take on.
You're taking on this role, and you owe every dancer who took that role on before you to like live up to a certain standard. And that would probably be the same, like, we even get the chance to see like some different artistic elements of a ballet. Like, we have the conductor in the red shoes, and like the pressure of having to produce all this music and make sure that it's in time with the ballet. Like, it's not just for yourself, it's for like this entire system of the ballet, but also the history of it as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, like, you are just a part of a very long line of dancers who've done this, and it's like you have all that pressure of like everyone else that's performed before you and will perform after you to like maintain this standard, I think. And it's like, I think, yeah, that really just like lends itself to this drive for perfectionism,
and like wanting to do something to remain known, respected.
It's very true, and it's like especially shown through like ballet as like a dance genre, because like those variations are, they stay the same and they're like hundreds of years old. Like, for example, like Odette, like that's hundreds of years old. Like, I think the difference with Suspiria is, since we're saying like it's not really ballet, it's modern, and that kind of asks us like, is there still like that aspect of, we were really tying it to ballet, of like perfectionism and regiment and discipline. And I think this kind of shows the side where it's like, okay, this actually is common among all genres of dance, not just ballet. Like, this, even though it's still pretty like classical, it's modern, it's like very technically modern, but yeah, there's still like that drive, there's still that aspect of regimen, and it's not just exclusive to ballet.
Yeah. Well, I think as ballet carries itself through like every style anyways.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like that, like discipline like carries itself, and the technique as well.
Definitely.
Carries itself.
Yeah, I think that's like nice for like, I guess talking about representation, like, you know, audiences, it's important for them to know that, you know, this isn't just this like balletic ideal. Like, you know, it's through all forms of dance, and all types of dancers deal with like this level of perfection and pressure and discipline.
Yeah, which is what interested me about this film, was that it doesn't look at ballet.
Right.
But it still has these tropes.
Exactly.
That we see in the other two films.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's a great way to tie them together. I want to say I'll watch it. I'm scared from your descriptions, though.
It is. It's very much like a horror, especially towards the end.
Yeah, very, like, body horror, which I think,
Yeah, it's very cold.
So cold,
Any thoughts on this soundtrack?
Thom Yorke goes crazy.
Thank you. Yeah. Let's give a listen to that, okay?
Yeah.
So this is Suspirium from the soundtrack of Suspiria. Guys, thanks so much for coming on the episode.
Yes, thanks for having me. Thanks.
Millie,
thanks.
Ava, we hope you're back again soon.
Yes.
Emma and I will be back.
We will. Next week, even, some might say.
Some might say next week at the same time, same place. Whoa, we will be talking about movies from the 80s.
Wow.
Yeah, get pumped. Anyway, we'll see you guys again soon. That was The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM. See you next week.